Though the Amar Rabbi Oseinu Zichronim Levracha B'mitzvah Zo She'asor Lehisyached Im Kol Ha'arayos. Part of the prohibition of getting too close to Arayos is that we're not allowed to be alone with them. Ritzoni Lomar Im Kol Ha'arayos Dvar Torah. That mid the Oraisa on a biblical level, we're forbidden to have yichud with anyone who is considered to be an erva. Now, this statement of Sefer Chinuch is not without controversy because it's not at all clear that, in fact, the prohibition of yichud is a deraisa at all. Many Rishonim state that a prohibition of yichud for an absolute erva is indeed deraisa, and that seems to be the commonly accepted opinion as the Sefer Chinuch presents it over here. But the Rambam, actually, in the 22nd parak of Hilchos Yisurei Bia, where he discusses the prohibition of yichud, he says that the whole prohibition of yichud is midivrei Kabbalah. And he doesn't mean Jewish mysticism. He means that it's an ancient received tradition that's removed from the real deraisa level. It's not, gzera derabanan, which you might, which would perhaps come later. Midivrei Kabbalah is some sort of fuzzy term that's used to mean something in between deraisa derabanan. Like the reading of the Megillah is called divrei Kabbalah. It's called divrei Kabbalah because it's obviously not deraisa, but it's a stronger level of derabanan. It was established by the early, very early sages and the later prophets. It was considered to be a higher level rabbinic prohibition. It's a question whether divrei Kabbalah, for example, reading the Megillah, whether the rules, for example, of suffek deraisa lechumra would apply, that if you have a doubt about whether you fulfilled a prohibition, something that was a midivrei Kabbalah, whether you have to do it again, like a biblical commandment, or perhaps it applies to the same rules as a derabanan rule, which would be lakula, that if you had a doubt about it, then you would have a right to go leniently. So, for example, let's say, like reading the Megillah at the night of Purim. Some people say that reading of the Megillah on the night of Purim is for sure derabanan, absolutely, and it's only the day reading that's midivrei Kabbalah. Some people say that, okay. But assuming that the night reading is also divrei Kabbalah, that's in between category. So let's say you had two different times that you consider to be at Tzeis HaKochav, an absolute halachic night, that you for mitzvahs derabanan, let's say ending minor fast days, which are for sure derabanan, so you went with an earlier time. But let's say for reading Kriya Shema, the nighttime Kriya Shema, you went with a little bit of a later time for Tzeis HaKochavim. So would you have to be makbid on the later time for reading the Megillah at the night of Purim, or could you do the earlier time because it's derabanan? That would be one of the examples of this. Also, some people, as we know, have a stringency, for example, after Shabbos or for deraisa, to wait to consider Tzeis HaKochavim 72 minutes after sunset. They call this in accordance with the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Whether it's actually the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam is extremely questionable, but nevertheless, there are many people who have this stringency. Some Hasidic sects consider that to be the main zman, but most in our community don't. But nevertheless, would you have the same idea if you were makbid on quote-unquote Rabbeinu Tam for, let's say, Kriya Shema at night or Motzei Shabbos, so would you have to do it for the Megillah as well? So, this question is somewhat unresolved, exactly the status of the prohibition of yichud, but a normal assumption is that at least for serious arayos, like an Eish HaSish, a married woman, for example, it is in fact a prohibition, a de'arayos, that's the way we treat it. Bein zikena bein yalda, whether this woman is old, or whether she's, 18 years old. She's 80 years old or 18 years old. The prohibition of yichud applies across the board. Again, we find this thing many times when it comes to the prohibitions of arayos, that we don't create, obviously, if everybody had to assess, oh, am I attracted to that woman or not, before going into yichud with her, and if you weren't, then you would be yichud, that would be a huge michshol, a stumbling block for the Jewish people in general. People might not be totally honest with themselves, even though you might think it's, sometimes people, think outsiders who hear about the prohibition of yichud, they're people not from Jews, for example. If they hear, oh, I'm not, let's say the woman is 70 years old, and a young person from Bikur Cholim comes to pay her a home visit, whatever it is, says, we need to leave the door open because I'm not allowed to be alone with you. She's thinking to herself, what? There's no way he's going to want to be with me. Why on earth can't we be alone together? But that's not the way the halacha works. It's an absolute prohibition, no matter what the status of the woman is. As long as she's an erva, then you have an absolute prohibition of yichud. Shayichud legalus erva hugorim, obviously being alone together is a major catalyst for the prohibitions of arayos being violated. Chutz min ha'em im bena, v'ha'av im bito, v'ha'bal im ishto nida shemutarim. Now, there are a few exceptions. Now, you're going to think of these as first grade arayos. Why on earth are they going to be permitted to have yichud together? These are the number one. So we have, of course, a mother with her son, and a daughter with her father, and we'll deal with those first, actually. Those are considered to be we said normally we don't assess the likelihood of these two people actually being nichshal in inappropriate actions when applying the prohibition of yichud, but here, the parent and the child is considered so abnormal that there would be any desire on their part to engage in any type of sexual conduct. That's exactly the Rei Kabbalah does include. That's the way it's derived from the pasuk in the Chumash, ki asischa achicha ben imecha, that the son of your mother would cause you to worship avodah zarah. The question is that you and your mother would be alone together, and other arayos, you would not be alone together. So that's the Divrei Kabbalah. That's how we learn out that from the text of the Chumash itself. Again, whether it's really the rice or not is a subject to a dispute. But it's explicitly excluded in the original basis of the formulation of this prohibition that a mother and a son are allowed to be alone together. And, of course, this also applies to touching. We know that it's also, if Sefer Chinuch doesn't present this explicitly, but that a mother and a son and a father and a daughter are allowed to hug and kiss, because it's assumed that there would be no inappropriate thoughts going on in such an action. That's considered to be pretty much universal across human nature, and any violation of that boundaries are real aberrations that we can't take into account when formulating halachic rules. It affects, you know, it would be a crazy, it would make family life impossible. They're allowed to have yichud together, and again, a parent and a child, no matter the gender, are always allowed to hug and kiss. Now, the question is, when this is excluded from the prohibition of yichud, so this is one of the major disagreements in halacha when it comes to something that is more common nowadays than perhaps it was 500 years ago, adopted children. That's why we have many poskim, including, I don't know if you call him a posik exactly, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe was very, 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 this is one of his, he didn't usually get involved in halacha too much, but one of his major halachic crusades was against adopted children, because he felt that it was absolutely prohibited for them to have yichud together, and if you adopt a child, obviously you're going to be in situations where you're going to be in yichud together, and he said, for sure, it's for sure to hug them and kiss them. And so it creates major problems to have an adopted child of the opposite gender, yeah?
Obviously, he put his money where his mouth was because he didn't have children.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, what is the problem then arises, what are you going to do with children who need to be adopted? Are you going to farm them out to non-Jews? I mean,
obviously not. You have orphanages. I know, it's hard to, yeah.
Yeah.
Other poskim feel that it doesn't go based on the actual genetic relationships. It goes based on the nature of how these people got to know each other, how they established their relationship in the first place. If you adopt a child as a baby, then you're not gonna. You might apply the same rule that you're absolutely not gonna have inappropriate thoughts when hugging and kissing, being alone with this child. So it's really shouldn't be an issue. But then again, you get into sticky territory. What if you adopt a teenager? So a teenager's parents, die tragically, chas v'shalom, and you adopt a teenager. So that would be much more of a problem. That would really be an issue. So different poskim take different approaches to exactly how to deal with adopted children of an opposite gender. I remember once I was talking to a friend of mine who was divorced, and he was a kohen. So I was thinking of I could possibly set him up with to get remarried. I said, would you consider an almana, a widow? Because since he'd been previously married, was a little older, so maybe Bill, even though a Cohen is, normally would try to marry someone who's never married before, so would she consider a widow? He said, yeah, but only if she had sons. If she had no daughters, right. Which is a very interesting response, taking this halacha into account.
But you know, it's not so far fetched as we might think. I mean, all this garbage you read in the newspaper. You know, half the time, whatever the thing, bad thing happens, it's the mother's boyfriend. It's the mother's boyfriend who's abusing the teenage girl. I mean, so
yeah, 100%.
There's a lot to be said for it.
Yeah, absolutely. But like I said, if there's, you know, if there's an upstanding couple that adopts a baby, you know, with 2 months old, so it's very very unlikely. But again, many poskim feel that we still apply the rules across the board. If it's not a natural child, then it's absolutely usur to be in yichud. It's forbidden to hug and kiss. I suppose it could be done if you have a large family. Then it's probably possible to live in. You know, not be in yichud with any of your adopted children of the opposite gender. Suppose it's possible, but it's very unlikely. There is a prominent mashgiach of a yeshiva in Queens, who I was told by a friend of mine who learns in that yeshiva, who has 10 adopted children.
Wow, God bless him.
So I don't know exactly, but how they do it, and obviously once I assume he's very very firm, so I assume he would. I don't know, but probably he'd be machmir on this. But I think it's easier if you do have 10 adopted children, then...
And I assume his wife is around most of the time.
Right, but no guarantees. I mean, no, maybe she has to... Not. But if you have such a large family, then possibly you're not going to get into prohibitions of yichud, even if you want to be machmir on this and you want to have adopted children. Now, the funny exception over here is that a husband with his wife, who is currently in Anita status, obviously it'd be impractical... If a husband and wife at any point were not allowed to be in yichud, but more than that, we assume that since when it comes down to a regular erva, you know that you're never going to be allowed to be with this person. So if you're in yichud, you're going to be tempted. But here, the husband and wife—they're constantly together; they're allowed to be with each other most of the time. So therefore, they're not going to be tempted even when they're in yichud together, when the wife is in anita status and she's a full-fledged absolute erva chayav karis if they have relations at
what
that time.
What about siblings? I just look ahead. Does he talk about that?
He does not talk about siblings. We will... Okay, I'll mention it. Since you mentioned it, we'll get to it right now. So siblings, many of the sources, the Rambam, the Chinuch over here, do not mention explicitly. The way it says in Shulchan Aruch is that siblings are allowed to have yichud, but they're not allowed to live together.
Like share an apartment. You
know. Right. So if
outside the family.
Right. So if brother and sister, just a brother and a sister, home alone together, and the parents want to take an overnight trip or something, and then come back, so that's okay. But they're not allowed to move in together into, let's say, they're after college, they both get jobs in the same city. They're not allowed to live together in an apartment. That's the rule when it comes to siblings. Yeah.
I had occasion to look this up once, and apparently, my understanding is that if it's okay, like if. In different cities, say, and one of them is traveling on business. The one that's traveling on business, you're allowed to stay overnight. You're allowed to stay for a couple of weeks, even whatever.
Perhaps
you're
not allowed
to set up a permanent.
Right, house. Right. It doesn't say. I don't believe it says exactly how long. Maybe 30 days. I believe it could be that some poskim give this year of 30 days. But in any event, we just, you're right. If you want to stay with your sibling for of the opposite gender for, a day or two, and you're, certainly that's fine.
Yeah.
Certainly that's fine. It's only the living together permanently that's a problem. And when it comes to touching, that's also a little bit of an issue. The Rambam says that while you don't receive, just like, again, he says, obviously, parents and children are always allowed to touch each other. That's mutter lechatchila, you're allowed. But he says... siblings of opposite genders, or let's say a man with his aunt. So he says, those you're not chayav malkus. It's not subject to the daraisa to come close to them because you're not going to have inappropriate thoughts hugging and kissing is not going to lead to further things because nobody wants to have relations with those people. But nevertheless, again, that means because that's intrinsically in the relationship as opposed to an old woman. Who's an old married woman who you probably don't want to, a young man probably doesn't want to have relations with her, but nevertheless, her category is forbidden, so it goes by category, it doesn't go by this particular person per se. Now, so the Rambam says that even though you're not chayav malkos, if you hug and kiss such a person, He says it's maisa tipshim. It's a stupid thing to do because it's against the spirit of the Torah. Ein karevin la'erva klal. You're not supposed to get close to arayos except for parents with children, and that's pretty much it. And that line of reasoning is adopted, in fact, in the Shulchan Aruch, and quoted by many, many poskim. I don't know, but it seems to be that many people nowadays are lenient about that. I once heard Rabbi Weider from YU give a defense of that, because we have certain things where it's not, again, where it's not absolutely prohibited, even either explicitly the Rabbanan or the Reis. The Rambam just says it's a stupid, wrong thing to do. So it says there is a precedent in halacha for being makel on these types of things when you say hakol l'shem shamayim, when you want to make sure that there's peace and everybody's on the same page, and you're not really doing it to go against halacha, you're doing it l'shem shamayim, again, whatever that means, whether it's really applicable in this case, I don't know, but that's the way Rabbi Weider wanted to defend it, that nowadays a lot of people are lenient about touching siblings and aunts.
Well, then you have blended families with...
Yeah.
You know, that would be really complicated, because presumably there's no allowance for that at all, that if you have...
You mean step-siblings?
Yeah.
Well, no,
so you
not
get,
even,
you get
well,
older teenage boys that...
That's for sure.
Dragged into a family.
But I mean, that would be very complicated.
Younger teenage girls, and it's a recipe for...
No, but that's completely us, or step-siblings?
Right. So that,
yeah.
But I mean... Because
the Chofetz Chaim married his stepsister, his first wife. His father died when he was young. His mother got remarried to a man who had a daughter from a different marriage. Uh-huh. He married his daughter.
Step.
He married his stepsister. They weren't related at all.
But he married her. We're not talking about teenagers.
I understand, but that's you're allowed to marry them.
Yeah,
they're it's a relationship that could, have sexual attraction in it.
But I'm just saying, it makes it, with divorce higher, it makes it more complicated.
Yeah.
It's a very complicated aspect of what otherwise might seem like a wonderful thing. Which I had never thought of before.
Yes, you're right. It's complicated, but you have to make sure that you set it up in a way that works. But it also applies only, again, to a male with an aunt. It doesn't apply to a female with her uncle. That would be completely usser to hug and kiss. Because that's considered... Right, exactly. That's why that's considered in halacha to be more likely of a relationship to have a sexual spark to it than a... Again, they are allowed to get married. It's not it might not be. It's not an erva per se. In other words, it's interesting that it's more lenient by the aunt, because that's a real erva that they're absolutely not allowed to get married, and not ever. But they're not going to want to as much. So it has a leniency to it, even though it's technically a more stringent halacha.
Right.
Excellent point. Also, grandparents with grandchildren is also a shaila. That's assumed to normally be permissible, that grandparents and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, all these types, if you're vertically related as opposed to horizontally related, that's considered to be certainly mutter. Reb Moshe Feinstein, incidentally, did not like this. He felt that after a certain age that grandparents and grandchildren should not be touching each other. But that's not the normally accepted practice. Normally accepted practice is that we do, grandparents and grandchildren do touch each other. Chutz, okay, so we just pointed out also that during Nida, the husband and wife are still allowed to be together. Chutz, there's a big exception to this, which is Mechasan Shepersha Ishto Nida Kodem Sheyivol. There's at a Chupas Nida, that's a more likely case nowadays. The way that Tevra Chinuch presents it is, let's say the Chas and Kala get married, and they go to the hotel for the wedding night, and oops, the Kala just realized she got her period. So you have a problem at that type of thing, that the chasen, that the wife, a married couple who are married, but they, and the wife is a nida, and they have never yet had relations, and they are forbidden to be in yichud with each other. Because part of the reason that a husband and wife are allowed to be in yichud is that they know what they're already, what's called pas besalo. They have bread in their basket already, and they know what it's like, and they know it's gonna, where they're gonna be able to do it again. It's just a matter of time, and so that's why then they're not gonna be so strong. That the Yitzhar is not going to be so strong that they wouldn't be allowed to be in Yichud. But in that case, they are allowed to be in yichud, and it creates very awkward situations. You have it when, again, so nowadays, in the olden days, in the old country, chuppas nida would be somewhat rarer, because they would calculate a day. Again, there wasn't as much stress involved in weddings. So first of all, the kala could be relatively relaxed. She's going to continue to get her periods at the normal times. They could predict more or less which days were going to be safe, that she wouldn't be anida during those days. And if she became anida during those days for some reason, say they were just inviting the people in the town anyway, they could say, "Whoops, we have to reschedule the wedding for another few days from now. No big deal."
And nobody felt embarrassed about that. That's interesting.
Well, they could cover it up. There could be many reasons why he could delay the wedding. Maybe the shochet got sick. He couldn't shecht you enough chickens for the wedding feast. I don't know. Whatever.
But it wasn't the hullabaloo that a wedding is today.
Right. So nowadays we have a few problems, which is that the wedding hall is booked months and months and months in advance usually. And as much as you try to predict what day the kala is going to be anida, it's impossible. And even if you try to do that, then you... Sometimes the stress can cause the kala to become anida for the time of the wedding anyway, it messes with her normal cycle. That's why Rabbi Bleich, I mentioned, he's against the kala using birth control before the wedding to control her period. It's very unusual.
Unusual to be against it?
Unusual to be against it. Everybody does it. That's
what I hear.
Yeah, everybody does it. It's not a question. But Rabbi Bleich is against it, so he says, but if you do like me, I have to warn you that most of the time it's going to be a chuppas nida, because the kala is going to be so stressed out that she's not going to be able to...
Even with the birth...
What?
If you don't
use the birth control.
Yeah.
Because she's going to be so stressed out, she's going to get her period right at that time.
So why is he against it?
He's against it for Hilchos Nida reasons, that he thinks that it's insufficient... Again, I feel like he's working with research from 30 years ago, but at that time, birth control... Moshe Feinstein also says something like this, that at that time, it was very hard to establish with certainty that a birth control pill would not cause a woman to bleed a little bit. So he feels that it could cause Shilas and Hilchos Nida if she's still on birth control pills and she doesn't realize what's going on. He says if she wants to be on birth control pills, she has to establish that it doesn't cause her to bleed by making bedikas all the time. It's absolutely... it's difficult to do what he says, but most poskim nowadays, even I think then, but certainly nowadays, that the birth control pills are very well established in the vast majority of women, that they're extremely effective in preventing menstruation, and they don't cause, unless you see it, it's not going to cause bleeding. So then nowadays it's very well accepted that we use birth control pills to make sure that it's not going to be a chuppas nida. I mean, the objection of Rabbi Bleich before the wedding is not because of birth control per se, because once you're married, before you're married, you're not obligated to try to get pregnant for sure. But anyway, so if it is a chuppas nida, which happens sometimes nowadays, which is more likely than they actually got married and then she got her period afterwards. So in that point, so they're not allowed to have yichud. The yichud at the wedding, normally you lock them up in a, not literally lock necessarily, but you close them up in a room together. So you have to have someone inside hiding in the yichud room, basically. So what you do is you have someone go in, hide in a closet or something. Mesader Kiddushin, being dramatic, you don't have to literally have to do it this way. The Mesader Kiddushin takes the Eide yichud, where nowadays a wedding where machmir to have witnesses to the fact that the chas and kala were in yichud together, which is part of the wedding ceremony, according to many opinions. And even though, according to most opinions, you actually don't need witnesses for the yichud at all. But we're machmir to do, we have to have witnesses for the yichud normally. So you have to, the Masada Kedushin will take the witnesses aside and say, I want you to come inside and look and make sure everything's in order. So they'll close the door of the yichud room, and the person will come out of the closet, and the Eidim will say, what's this guy doing here? So the Masada Kedushin will hopefully tactfully explain what's going on in a way that causes minimal embarrassment to the Chas and Kala. And the witnesses will, stand outside the Yichud room as normal, but they'll know that they're not really witnessing a Yichud because they're not really alone together. There'll be someone else in the room because it was a situation of Chuppas Nida, and they're not allowed to have Yichud together. It's even more embarrassing if you have situations where to get married, it's not a chuppas nida, people get married, and then there are certain physical and mental problems that could be in place, especially Tchas and Kala live in a yeshivish community and they don't even know what relations are and what the mechanics are exactly in a very right-wing community. So a lot of times it will take several nights, whatever, several tries before they succeed in consummating the marriage. So in the event that the Kala becomes Anida before they succeed in consummating the marriage, then you have a serious problem because they're not allowed to be in Yichud together. And that's an even more embarrassing situation because it's after the wedding even, and they were allowed to be alone, and then all of a sudden they have to start sleeping separately. It's very difficult, but it does happen sometimes, yeah?
They take so much trouble to tell them about all the details of, like, if that happens, the thing you just described, even though you... All this level of halachic detail, that they can tell them. They can't tell them where to put what. They can't...
You have to translate the teaching into practice, which is hard when you really don't know. Again, when you're so sheltered that you really don't understand until they tell you before the wedding. Again, even people who are not so sheltered, it could take a little. It could take more than one try, but hopefully, the Kala taking birth control pills to make sure she doesn't become Anida. Hopefully, that she can extend that for a day or two past the wedding, or 3 days, or 4 days, whatever, to make sure that they at least succeed once before she becomes Anida. It's also somewhat counterintuitive. Because most of the time now, when you have, in the Orthodox community, you have a, not now, I mean in general, in the Orthodox community, most weddings that happen are between the chassan has never been married before, and the kala has never been married before. So in that case, the kala is usually subject to the halacha of dam besulim, which is hymenal blood, that after the first act of relations, so she becomes usur because of the hymenal bleeding. Even if she happens not to have experienced hymenal bleeding, we still assume that that she did, even if she just didn't see it. And therefore, for a woman who does have a hymen, or at least some remnants of the hymen, so the halacha of dam besulim is in effect that immediately after the first act of relations after the wedding, they have to separate and she has to undergo the full tahara process with all the and go to the mikvah, etc. So it's somewhat counterintuitive because now the Chas and Kala are allowed to be alone together because they have consummated their marriage, but just once. They just tasted it, and now they have to separate. So the power of the Yetzirah might in some ways be even stronger than if they hadn't consummated yet. They were still nervous about it, and they, maybe even if she was Anita, they might, in some situations where people are extremely nervous, so they might like a few extra days after they got married to, get to know each other a little better in certain situations. But in any event, that's the way the halacha is formulated. But there are poskim, you should know, who try as much as possible to eliminate the halacha of dam besulim. Either they recommend that the woman have her hymen or hymenal remnants surgically removed before the wedding. They find various kulas. Sometimes, since women nowadays get married older, then they'll go to have a gynecological examination before the wedding, and the doctor will say that she has absolutely no remnant of the hymen left just because she's grown out of it. So in that case, the chas and kala do not have to observe the halacha of dam besulim. But
really?
Yeah.
Is that a gynecological fact?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it is. No, that's true.
Really?
So a doctor's letter would be accepted.
A doctor's letter combined with the flat fact that she didn't bleed after the first act of relations.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Obviously.
Right.
If she bleeds.
Right. So those two things, the confluence of those two things, they would not need to observe the halacha of dam besulim. But again, if a woman, most women getting married, youngish women, do have some sort of remnants of, maybe they don't have it the same way they did when they were 16, but they do have some remnants, so most women do not want to undergo this surgical procedure, and they do have some remnants, therefore, even if they don't actually bleed, they will have to observe the halacha of dam besulim.
Why? Because that's just...
Even if they don't actually bleed?
Yeah.
Because we assume that that she did bleed a little bit, it was just got absorbed in all the other fluids and stuff.
It is... long been my thought that one of the reasons for the Shavuot brachos for 7 days is to take their minds off it.
Longer than 7 days, unfortunately, though. Usually it can be much longer. Let's say they, even if they succeeded in consummating the marriage the night of the wedding. Right, but then, since the Kala is on birth control, so she was taking her birth control up until the day of the wedding to ensure that she wasn't Anita for the wedding night, so now she stops immediately. She stops her birth control immediately. She starts going on the placebo, or she wants to get pregnant right away, so she stops the birth control entirely. So it takes a few days for the hormones to get out of the system. You can take, even if they succeeded immediately, maybe she doesn't get her period till 4 or 5 days after the wedding, 3, 4, 5 days after the wedding, and then she bleeds for 4 to 6 days, and then she has the Seshiv and Nikiyim. We're talking over 2 weeks a lot of times after the first consummation of the marriage until they're allowed to go at it again. So that's a very long time where the Yetzer Hara is very strong. So that's why there's some poskim who went even farther in trying to reduce the prohibition of Dam Besulim. But that's very much those types of leniencies are very resoundingly rejected by all the other poskim. And are certainly not to be relied upon. But if possible, if you can get out of it with legitimate halachic tools, so it might be recommended. I mean, part of the motivation of even this rabbi I'm speaking about who wanted to go even farther in finding ways out of the halacha of Dam Besulim is that he says he's heard of many, many cases, even in yeshivish Lakewood communities, where the Chas and Kala were simply not, they simply could not withstand the temptation that they consummated their wedding. They just discovered what relations is like. Then they have 2 weeks plus ahead of them until they can even touch again at all. So it's a very, very, very difficult temptation. The way he went about trying to quote unquote solve it is very questionable and very, very much, very much rejected. The idea behind it is a good motivation. If the halacha is in place, the halacha is in place. There's nothing you can do about it. But if there's any way to legitimately get out of it,
he knows about the situation.
Umutter. Okay, so it continues the Sefer Chinuch. Umutter lehisyached im hazocher vim habehema. It's permitted for two men to be in yichud together, or for a man or a woman to be in yichud with an animal. Even those are not allowed to have relations with them. We're normally assuming shelo nechshedu Yisrael al kach, that the Jewish people are not suspected of engaging in bestiality or homosexual relations. So perhaps we have to reassess that nowadays. I mean, since it's so common, the minhag certainly still is for that two men are allowed to have yichud together. Yeah, even like in yeshiva dorms, you have rooms with just two guys in it, and it should be reassessed based on this halacha, but perhaps it should be reassessed. Yeah,
I think I heard somewhere that in some places they're reconsidering that and thinking it's better to have three in a room.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Yeah, probably. So the question is also the Sefer, the Minchas Chinuch writes over here. So he discussed the halacha of Yichud, how technically, according to halacha, there's no problem. But he says, remember we pointed out in the beginning when we were learning this mitzvah, that he says, Shaloli his adein b'achas mikol arayos, what's the mitzvah? Not to engage in intimate contact with any of the forbidden relationships. Vehein kirovos ve'ishes ish v'nida. They are close relatives and a married woman and a nida. So what did he leave out? There are other things that are forbidden sexual relationships, but he doesn't include them in the arayos per se. And that's homosexuality and bestiality. So,
also incest,
no, incest is included. That's krovos. That's what he said. So are they, even though you're not allowed to have relations in such a manner, are they technically included as part of the category of arroyos? Which sounds here like it is, that really they should be included in yichud, but since this is part of like the mother and the son and the father and the daughter, that we assume that there's not going to be any, that since the Jewish people were not nechshad on this, not suspected of these types of behavior, so therefore you're allowed to do it. But really, they should, because they are included in the Arayos. But the Minchas Chinuch suggested from this diuk before that we had at the beginning of the mitzvah that he said, if the Sefer Chinuch wanted to include issues of homosexuality or being with animals as part of the Arayos prohibition, why did he give the examples, Vein Krovos, Veishes, Ishvenida, that's incest and adultery and Nida, he should have just said, not to engage in intimate contact with any of the Arayos without giving the example. Why did he bother giving the example? So whether this diuk is a good diuk or not, we could discuss. But in any event, the Minchas Chinuch suggests, he says that they are included in the prohibition of Arayos. Therefore, he suggests as follows, that you're not allowed to touch them derech chiba v'taiva either. So if that's the case, Sefer Chinuch, so Minchas Chinuch rather, so what exactly are you talking about? Let me ask you a question. A man and a woman, under normal circumstances, are they allowed to hug and kiss, even without overt sexual connotations? No, certainly not. So are two men allowed to hug and kiss? Yes, absolutely they are, without, again, so the question is, where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? Can you, if that's allowed, certainly, by two men, or you're allowed to hug and kiss your pet also. I mean, obviously. If you're allowed to do that, so where do you draw the line? What's considered derech chiba? What's considered kreva? What's considered getting so close that you're not allowed to do it by these types of forbidden relationships as well? So this is the Minchas Chinuch suggests that an absolute type of what we call kreva would be that the genitals should touch. So you're not chayav for the prohibition of arayos for actually having relations with them. That would be the chayav kares, or for the ones that are subject to a death penalty, you would not be subject to death penalty until you had what's called ha'ara'a, which is that the insertion of the member to the point of the corona, that the whole gland should be inserted into the into either the man or the woman, depending on what type of erva you're dealing with here. So that's, but if your genitals just touch, then that would be, according to the way the Minchas Chinuch presents it, an objective type of coming close to an erva, which would be prohibited with an animal or with homosexual relations as well. But I want to. But the question is, what do we do with intermediate categories? So let's say something again for in many cultures. So men hug and kiss in a platonic way. And that's completely mutter. But let's say, excuse my terminology, what about making out? Something like that. That's overtly, again, where exactly you draw the line is not so clear. But would that be a prohibition of arayos, or would it simply be a prohibition of, drawing close to arayos, or would it simply be a prohibition of blos asur acharei levavchem v'acharei nechem, that you're not allowed to lead yourself in to thoughts that are inappropriate and engage in behavior that might be arousing when there's no outlet for it. So that seems to be somewhat of an unresolved question. Right, so the notes over here on the Minchas Chinuch quotes a super commentary called the Minchas Yochid, which says that, first of all, if homosexuality and bestiality are not considered real arayo, so maybe there's no source that there's any prohibition of kirva per se. He says, just like, you know, even by a parent and a child, even though in theory, and there are cases in the news here sometimes of inappropriate sexual conduct, we don't have prohibitions against it. So we assume too that, again, like I said, lo nechshu Yisrael, that Jews are not suspected of engaging in homosexuality or bestiality, and therefore there's no isser of kreva. The whole prohibition of kreva doesn't apply at all, and certainly too if they're not part of the technical category of arayos. And that would apply even to what's it called, the genitals touching and not going in, that according to that would just be a prohibition of causing yourself inappropriate thoughts, perhaps causing a seminal emission, but would not be a prohibition of coming close to arroyos per se. There could also be a nafkamina, a difference as to whether this is considered crave al arroyos or not. So we know that arroyos are one of the prohibitions in the Torah that's yehorig val yavor, that one is better to be killed than to violate the prohibition of arroyos. So somebody puts a gun to your head and says, here is a married woman, have relations with her, I'm going to kill you, so you have to allow yourself to be killed in such a situation. So the question is, so then if he says, so the same thing too, that if somebody puts a gun to a man's head and says, you have relations with another man or I'm gonna shoot you, so you have to allow yourself to be shot rather than killed in any way, rather than engaging in the relation. So what if he says, do other types, not the actual actual act of homosexual intercourse, which the Torah considers the basic cardinal prohibition, but other types of sex acts that could possibly be done between two men. So for by a woman, that would be that since that's absolutely part of kreva la rayos kamis abizrayu is the way the Gemara calls it, part of the accessories to gilui arayos. So if somebody says, do other types of sex acts with a married woman that don't actually involve real intercourse, so one still has to allow oneself to be killed rather than doing that. But if somebody says, do it with another man, so maybe that's not Yehorek Val Yavor, so maybe you are allowed to do that rather than be killed. That's why nowadays, again, we question the applicability of Lo Nechshu Yisrael Lokach, that Jews are not suspected of this, and nowadays it's much more accepted and common to be gay. Then people are much more open about it. People want to be part of the firm community and still be actively gay. Okay, so we try to accept them as much as we can. But people who still want to maintain their adherence to the Torah as much as possible, even in the sexual domain, which is what we encourage them to do, so they'll engage in sex acts besides the real cardinal homosexual act of the Torah, that's the pichi of karis and skila, etc., in the Torah. So again, so whether that's technically an isra of arayos, which would make it worse, or it's a lower level of prohibition, we hope for their sake it's a lower level of prohibition, but it does seem to be an unresolved type of question in the poskim, exactly the status of such things. Kishe'era Maisa Amnon V'Tamar continues the Sefer HaChinuch, when we had the issue with two of David HaMelech's children, who were step siblings like of Amnon and Tamar, the famous story in Sefer Shmuel, that Amnon, David HaMelech's son, wanted to be with his half-sister Tamar. So therefore, they remember he pretended to be sick, and she was nursing him back to health, and then he raped her. So at that point, so David HaMelech, that's our tradition, David Gazar David Uveis Dino al Yichud de Pnuya. So in the previously, it was not prohibited for a man and an unmarried woman to be in Yichud, because remember, the prohibition applied only to arayos, only to actual people who are in this category of the real strong, high-level sexual prohibitions. So here, even if she's not an Ida, so then a man is not allowed to be in Yichud with an unmarried woman. That's starting from the time of David HaMelech. Shammai v'Hillel, even later period, Gazru al Yichud Goyim, that we're not allowed to be alone with non-Jews. And even, so again, non-Jews, we're not allowed to have relations with them, but they're not, again, part of this technical category of arayos, and again, in previous times, it was also considered very unusual for not Jews and non-Jews to be alone together. So therefore, it was no explicit prohibition that was needed before this time, but then Shammai and Hillel saw that they needed to formulate an explicit prohibition, and they did so. B'tiru zichronim levracha. So now we're getting to some permissions over here. Oh, I should add also, this the Minchas Chinuch adds that it's not his chiddush. It just quotes the halacha that was omitted by the Sefer HaChinuch, that a tumtum and an androgynos, that somebody who is a hermaphrodite or somebody with ambiguous genitalia, is not allowed to be alone with a woman, because an androgynous hermaphrodite is considered to be somewhat attracted to women. But a man is allowed to be with a tumtum and an androgynous, because even though in theory they could engage in prohibited relations, then still it's considered that men are not normally attracted to these types of people, tumtum and androgynous, so therefore they're allowed to be in yichud together. Even though if a man, again, androgynous with somebody who is a hermaphrodite, if a man has relations with the hermaphrodite in the manner of homosexual relations, then that's an absolute prohibition of Mishkav Zachar, normal, just like having with relations with an absolute regular male. Nevertheless, since they're not going to be attracted to this person, then it's the same. Even though they could, if they had relations with a female part, then that would be subject to the same. That would also be asur, but not subject to the same level of prohibition, because it's a safek, it's only a doubt. Therefore, since they're just not going to have, they're not going to desire it, so they're allowed to have yichud, which is interesting. The tiru zichronim lebracha, the sages allowed us listakel b'fnei pnuya l'misha mistakel ba'aladash yisa osa l'isha im tiyanoa be'inav. That one exception to the prohibition of generally staring at women that were not allowed, that were not currently, that are arayos, it's generally assumed even if she is a nida. Then you're allowed to look at her carefully to make sure you find her attractive if you're assessing her whether you want to get married. So that, the sages said, is appropriate for people to do that, to make sure that you're not going to have a one-night stand marriage, that you're going to get to the wedding chamber together, and whoops, I was so frum, I didn't even look at you before the wedding, but guess what, now we're married, I'm allowed to look at you, and I really don't like what I see, so afraid we're going to have to get divorced. So that's to avoid such a situation, such a bizayon to Jewish kalos, Jewish girls, so that we're allowed to look at them carefully to make sure we want to marry them. That's part of the heter. Also, we have an extended heter to go on dates, even though a lot of things on dates are semi-intimate, so we have to, in our society today, so we assume that in order to make sure you're semi-compatible with a person, this is part of the required screening procedure to avoid these types of things from happening. Again, nothing is foolproof, but again, really, in halacha, maybe the Hasidim have it right. Maybe you should just go on one date in the parents' house, talk to each other for a few minutes. He looks at her. She looks at him to make sure they're not totally repulsive. They can carry on a conversation for a few minutes. Maybe that's really the right way to do it. But we've extended it because nowadays our rabbis and our community feel that the Chas and Kal need to get to know each other a little bit more before they get married. Again, but you shouldn't have to make sure that the boundaries stay quite drawn and you don't go really over the line into inappropriate conduct. Shouldn't divorce her if she becomes disgusting in his eyes after he sees her. It's explained in many places in the Talmud, in various places without a clear grouping of them in one place. Then we're over time, so we're not going to run to finish the mitzvah. We'll try to finish it next time.